I'm expecting another big move this year. So I think it's going to stay quiet until it's not. It's going to be quiet for another week or two, or maybe another month, or maybe two, probably at the most. But then we're going to have an announcement from Kazatomprom in late July, early August, that's going to forecast production for.
Justin, how we doing?
Doing really well. How are you doing, Andy?
Doing great. Thanks for coming up on board or coming back with me here.
My pleasure.
So last time you were on, this was late March. I want to say it was March 24th. This was right when the uranium market was correcting, if you would, after a massive, massive run up. It was just everybody was getting concerned if this was going to get away from us, and obviously it hasn't. We've had a couple of months of consolidation, and yet we're seeing some really, it seems like some really bullish news for uranium on both the supply and demand side, but I would say mostly the demand side. But I want to get your thoughts on all of that, what's going on the last couple of months.
Sure. And I would say the last couple of months to summarize into a soundbite would be a continued consolidation in the physical market following a historically large move that we saw from the summer of last year through late January, early February this year, which was a move from in the high 40s, low 50s spot all the way up to 106. Pulled back to 84, chopped around 90. It's pulling back again, retesting that pullback from February. But that's a huge, huge move for any commodity. And for uranium, historically, that's a massive move that has never really happened. The exception of, perhaps early 2007, we saw some similar moves, at least in terms of pace, not necessarily in the overall move of the price. So a truly historic moment for this market and for this industry, really. And it takes a very long time for that move to digest. So during this period of time where the spot has gone up really fast, pulled back, chopped sideways, pulling back again here, the term price just keeps chugging higher in a very sort of boring and expected manner, a couple of dollars every month. So now we're sitting at $77, $78 term reported by UxC, $80 reported by TradeTech. That has continued to move up sort of in the background as the spot price goes on much more wild swings. So
Okay,
we've had a consolidation in the physical market while the fundamental case continues to build. And like you mentioned, the demand story just continues to grow in a positive manner.
if you can explain that just real quick, and this is somewhat rhetorical to me, but if you can explain the term price again real quick for our listeners, for those that don't know.
Sure. Yeah. So the spot market essentially is for 12 months or sooner settlement of a transaction in physical uranium or anything across the uranium fuel cycle, whether that's UF6, uranium hexafluoride or converted uranium or enriched uranium. So there's spot and term market. Spot near-term settlement. The term market is anything beyond 12-month settlement. And typically the term market, the long-term market, is where utilities will source most of their fuel needs across the fuel cycle. And that's the same case for uranium. So typically 85% of the utilities' needs will be sourced in the long-term market via long-term contracts that are usually negotiated privately between a buyer and a seller, a producer and a utility. And most, about 80%, 85% of that market gets reported. So this year, for example, there's only 28.5 million pounds reported officially secured in the long-term contracting market. Now, typically, this market goes in very large swings, also usually in volume. So you will see an annualized volume of term market contracts that will go many, many years of very small volume. Why? Because the market is oversupplied. The prices are really low. That's what we saw in the early 2000s, late 90s, early 2000s. That's what we saw again in the 2010s. And now we're starting to swing up. Last year, we did 160 million pounds secured in the long-term market. But a very large chunk of that was contracts between the Ukrainian utility and Cameco in Q1 of last year. So you pull that out, still a relatively small volume, nowhere near replacement rate, which is about 185 million pounds. So, but the term contracting market really is where you're going to see the meaningful prices and the meaningful moves. The spot market is a little bit more surface, much more volatile, less impactful, less important, but still much more visible to investors. So when investors see spot swing huge all the way, blasting through $100, coming all the way back to the low 80s, that's extremely volatile. People react to that. When in reality, in the background, the term market just keeps chugging higher without taking a break.
Got it. And is the spot market serve as a baseline for negotiation typically?
Typically, it does not. So usually, especially, and it really depends on the market. If you go back into a buyer's market, an oversupplied market from the previous decade, the spot market was not necessarily irrelevant, but it was much less relevant. So you had contracts that were being signed that were primarily fixed prices or majority fixed prices, and you'd have a mix between fixed price and market reference or spot reference upon delivery. And now what we're seeing is most of these new contracts that are being signed are, if not entirely, mostly market referenced contracts. So at the time of delivery, and the contract can look like anything. It's not like there's a set type of contract that everybody signs. These have a lot of flexibility in negotiations within the buyer and the seller. So it could look at like a 3-month average spot price is what the utility will pay at the time of delivery, something like that, right? So it really has a lot of nuance to it. But when the market is swinging up, when it's a seller's market, who are the sellers? The sellers are the producers. The producers have much more of a understanding of the future pricing environment than the utilities do. The utilities, it's not really their job to time the market, to predict the future. They buy when they need to buy. They do what they can to optimize costs, but it isn't their job to predict where the price is going to be 3, 4, 5 years down the road and make decisions now based on that prediction, because the price can swing wildly and they've been hurt in the past by contracting at $100 and then it fell back to $40. You know, that was 2007 to 2008. It was an incredibly wild swing. A lot of utilities and a lot of the same guys that were operating in the sector back then are still working in the sector now. They remember that clearly. They don't want to chase the price, et cetera, et cetera. But the producers, they see the supply deficit. They know where this is heading and they say, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to sign contracts that are mostly or entirely referenced to the market at the time of delivery. We'll do a floor price that will protect us. And the floor price is usually right around where the actual officially printed term price is. So floors right now are around $80. Ceilings, we're hearing there are contracts being negotiated with no ceilings, but the ceilings that are being put in place right now, $120, $130 for at the time. Yeah.
That reminds me of the curve, the oil curve, futures oil curve, and like natural gas or oil or whatever. That's really what it reminds me of. Well, let's get back to the state of uranium right now that you see it. Again, we have this consolidation, a lot happening, lots going on. What's really going to be driving the price right now, from now going towards the end of the year? And how's the market really digesting those issues?
So what's happening right now is it's very, very quiet. And we're leading into the summer months. And the summer is usually a quiet period. Last couple of years, it's been a bit of an anomaly, primarily just because of the shakeup that we've seen in the conversion, the enrichment markets, largely due to the invasion of Ukraine, the self-sanctioning that Western utilities have done in terms of securing new supply from Russia. New supply, existing contracts, especially in the U.S., have been pulled forward in a big way. So the U.S. utilities have done what they can to cover their needs because of this concern about Russia. And now we know for sure, because this becomes law in 2 months from now, is they will no longer be able to get Russian uranium after 2028, period, the end. So in the nuclear world, that's tomorrow. That's a really, really big deal.
Yeah.
In the near term, they pulled forward material from Russia. Utilities across the board have flexed up contracts for the past couple of years. So in a rising price environment, if you have a legacy contract with partially fixed prices, you have a fixed price. If you signed this contract 2 or 3 years ago, you got a fixed price at $40 a pound. And here we are at 80. And so if you can, within that contract, if there's the ability to flex up and receive sometimes up to 20% more material than was actually signed in that contract, across the board, utilities have done this. And so it has tightened the midterm a little bit for producers. Producers don't have a lot of uranium to sell for the next few years. But what it also has done has temporarily bolstered inventories for utilities. And so it basically just pulls forward material from the future and slows down the pace of term contracting, but it's a temporary phenomenon. So if you understand this has happened, you understand why the term contracts are so tepid this year. Huge price move. The price, okay, the price doubled in the last 9 months. And we've pulled forward material. We flexed up on contracts. So we're going to wait this out and let this settle out for a minute. And we're going into the summer months. So it's very, very quiet. The pullback that we've seen in the spot price over the past week, right? It's pulled back $6 or $7. That is pulled back on a couple hundred thousand pounds traded. It's nothing, right?
Yeah.
It's nothing. So this is not the pullback that we're seeing. This is really important to understand. It doesn't mean it's irrelevant because obviously the sector trades the spot price. The sector's selling off again today. We've seen a big pullback. A lot of these things pulling back to the rising 200 day. So, but to recognize that the pullback is coming from a tiny, tiny, insignificant amount of pounds is very, very important, because if we were seeing 500,000 pounds, 1 million pounds dumped into the spot market, pushing the price down, that's a concern. That is not what we're seeing here. So this is just an utterly quiet market. Utilities are getting ready. The fuel buyers are getting ready to go on vacation. So we have this period where they're just waiting it out and it's quiet. And we go through these periods once or twice a year. We go through a period of larger volume trades in the spot market, the price moving up, sometimes very steeply. There's a lot of this energy around it. Then it peaks out, it pulls back, consolidates, and it gets quiet. And that's going to happen repeatedly over and over and over in this bull market.
Right.
So just coming back from this conference last week at the World Nuclear Fuel Market in Atlanta, I can give a really brief summary on that, which is utilities are utterly complacent. They're utterly complacent. And so they're generally covered. I mean, I'm speaking primarily about the U.S. utilities because that was the largest contingent at this conference. So they pulled forward material. They have flexed up on contracts. They're sitting on a decent inventory, not historically large, not historically small, kind of average, a little more than 2 years worth of inventory. And they're making a lot of money selling electricity. So what they've been, we've seen electricity prices rise pretty much across the board. I'm in California, so I'm kind of an anomaly here, paying almost 30 cents a kilowatt hour. But if you go to looking at some of these data center deals that have been done with some of the utilities, very, very high electricity pricing. So they're making a lot of money. They're especially the nuclear operators. So a lot of these utilities operate various types of electricity production, but the nuclear side of things, super de-risked because we've seen clean energy production tax credits coming from the IRA. So the feeling amongst utilities in the US is like, just comfort. They're okay with the situation. They don't like where the price is at. They don't want to chase the price. This is actually something that was stated by a fuel buyer in a panel during this conference. We don't want to chase the price based on some random post on X. It's like, yeah, okay. All right. This guy thinks
that would
the
be you.
Price is moving. Yeah. Me or my buddy Quakes or whoever it might be, right? But yeah, no, clearly prices aren't moving from a Twitter post. It's the most absurd thing I've heard coming from that conference. But that's where they're at. You know, they don't want to chase the price.
Right.
So they're going to chill until they don't have to. And in our estimation, but we also have, just to circle back to the price and where things are going right now, the term price is firm. We got $80 term price. So the downside potential for spot is pretty minimal here because you can arbitrage that. You can buy right. pounds in spot and you can sell them into the term market. That's a carry trade. And you can arbitrage that all day long with floors at $80. You know, you can buy $80 uranium, sell it for $95 a pound going out 3 years, and you've got a nice little spread there.
You're going to make some money. Yeah.
But that isn't happening very much because the volume isn't there. You're not going to carry trade 50,000 pounds. So the downside is minimal here in my estimation. But going forward, what we're going to see at some point is a utility come in with a very large size into the term contracting market. And there are some very large RFPs out there right now. There's one coming from the Slovaks that's going out like 2026 to 2039, up to 21 million pounds.
2039?
Yeah, for uranium or they're like, we'll take anything, uranium, UF6, UP, whatever. We need this much, up to this much and going out this far. The European utilities are far more active in the term market. And so they're recognizing that to some extent, US utilities are asleep at the wheel. Or they're concerned about Russia. They're doing everything they can to lobby and get waivers for deliveries in the next few years. Once they have that figured out, they're going to come back into the term market. But for now, that's their priority. For everybody else, You got the South Koreans. They came in with a huge RFP last year. That started to move the market. That was one of the triggers that moved the market back in like July. That never got filled. So they're going to have to come back into the market, probably not with an RFP. They might come back with a term market contract and negotiation off market. But the South Koreans, the Slovaks are already in there. You have the Japanese utilities. Two more nuclear power plants are going to be restarted this year. TEPCO will be their first restart with the Kashiwazaki Kariwa 7. Probably going to get pushed into the first part of next year, but some very good moves are happening there. The government is actually investing in constructing some infrastructure on the highways surrounding this nuclear power plant in case of a meltdown. There would be some safety precautionary, like the government is investing in it. And what they're waiting for is the prefecture approval for restart. They've actually already reloaded fuel. And this is TEPCO. TEPCO was the operator of Fukushima Daiichi. So this is their first restart following that accident. So it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Guess what I'm trying to say is there's an enormous amount of demand. The investors, the producers, and the analysts like UxC and TradeTech, all of them are like, guys, this supply deficit is real. Wake up. There were multiple statements of warning within this conference to the utilities that were in the audience. Basically, don't forget about uranium, you guys. This is coming. This is coming. This is coming. And they're all just pretty much asleep dealing with what they have to deal near term, which is Russian waivers. So quiet before the storm. That's my soundbite.
Got it. Well, my question really is this becoming, and it's twofold, is this becoming a demand story now? Because previously is really a supply story, right? Correct me if I'm wrong. And now is this a demand story or both?
And then, I would say it's still both. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then my second question really is the contrarian money really has been made, and that's really the stupid easy, but it's also what I call the scary money, because anything could happen. Meaning that's, you're really the first, who knows how long it's going to sit at a certain level, but it's the contrarian play because nobody wants it. That's no longer the case. So where do you see this market, I guess, in that spectrum, meaning the early buyers and the contrarians to being way overbought, and you know, you're talking about AI stocks and that sort of thing over here. Where are we in that spectrum?
I like your term scary money, which it was. I mean, I was a contrarian investor in this sector going back 2017, 2018, and watching the sector move sideways to down for a couple of years prior to being completely fleshed out in March of 2020. So that certainly was a scary time to be invested in this sector. Even though things were looking generally positive, still back then, it was just a bet on the price going higher because it was trading, the price of uranium going higher, because it was trading well below the cost of production. Had nothing to do with a nuclear renaissance. It had nothing to do with the United States life extending almost their entire fleet, even talking about restarting reactors. So right now, the way that I would categorize it is, has the scary money and the quote unquote easy money been made in the sector? Is it no longer contrarian? Yes. Is it a far easier investment now? 100%. The de-risking that's happened is profound. So simply based on a few different factors that I would say have coalesced in the last 2 years to produce a very, very supportive environment for the operating nuclear fleet and supporting environment for the building of new reactors. And these things have happened in a very, very short period of time. That would be Russia weaponizing energy and seeing an energy crisis about 2 years ago in Europe. That highlighted the importance of nuclear. The continued concerns about quote unquote climate change and nuclear being officially green in most sectors. You're seeing, the EU categorizing nuclear as green within the taxonomy, that is now officially supported low cost green financing to EDF, the nuclear operator in France. And they're saying that the 32 reactors that they built in the late 70s, early 80s are all going to be life extended with this funding. 32 life extensions in France. That's a really big deal.
Yep.
We've seen, of course, the Japanese start to accelerate restarts. Like I mentioned, they've restarted 12. Two more are happening this year. At least one, possibly two next year. That's very good. and the sea change that we've seen in the United States as the largest nuclear market in the world. About 25% of annual demand comes from the United States. So what we do here matters on a global scale. Just yesterday, TerraPower announced that they broke ground building the first SMR in the United States. That's the Natrium reactor being built to replace a coal plant in Wyoming.
Oh,
this, I think, is a really, really important thing that most people are overlooking. And that is that an SMR that is being backed by a tech company, essentially, you know, Bill Gates is a co-founder of this, and Microsoft is investing in clean energy. And there's been plenty of sound bites coming from Gates and Microsoft about supporting nuclear and building nuclear. But here we have essentially what is a tech-backed SMR company that is breaking ground to build the non-nuclear aspects of this project. They're starting to invest. They're starting to actually literally put shovels on the ground far prior to NRC approval of this design. So where you'll see utilities say, and you can actually see polls with the US utilities, they're all interested in new nuclear right now, all of them. Most of them are interested in small modular reactors because of the finance risk of building large, but none of them want to build first of a kind. None of them want to do it. They want somebody else to build the first one and maybe the second one, and then maybe they'll consider building one. But now we have a tech company here saying, we'll take that risk. Let's get going.
Yeah.
This, I think, is a huge tell, and a huge tell of where things could go. And we also have, of course, underpinning a lot of de-risking of especially the existing nuclear fleet. It remains to be seen how aggressively we'll see new nuclear being built for this purpose, but AI and data centers,
yep,
the actual growth of electricity demand is upon us. And mm-hmm. I can give you two examples of this, and they're both very similar. There was a presentation done at this conference by a gentleman representing a number of Japanese utilities, and his whole presentation was about kind of the process of restarts and how the restarts are going. And we've got five restarts on the table in Japan, by the way, in the next 2 years. And he essentially said in 2021, Japan had a plan for 2030 that actually predicted a decline of electricity demand of about 10% in the country. And they've got a declining demographic. They've got birth rates that are very low, et cetera, et cetera. So Japan was expecting electricity demand to decline going out to 2030. That was only 3 years ago. Now they are redoing this plan. They're going to be releasing it later this year that goes out to 2030 again. And they're expecting to show a rise in electricity demand. So in just 3 years, that table is turned. And the same goes for Dominion Energy, which is an operator of nuclear power plants. They're based in Virginia, which has the most data centers. Same thing with them. They expected flat electricity demand going out into the next decade in 2021. Now they're expecting they could actually see a doubling of electricity demand, a doubling of electricity demand going out to 2040. And that's how quickly this has shifted.
That's changed.
It's an insane shift for essentially the Western or the developed world to see electricity demand rising and potentially rising very, very fast. There's this whole conversation around AI that I think is really, really interesting when it comes to electricity demand.
Yeah. Well, you're starting to see it in other markets as well. Again, to piggyback on that, like the copper market or, the nickel market, aluminum market, just they need these raw commodities, if you would, for electricity. And they take so much electricity. So interesting. Justin, any final thoughts here moving into, I guess, how you see the market moving into the end of the year? Do you see any, I don't know, big spikes coming by the end of the year? Or do you see things, again, being somewhat complacent? What advice, and I don't want to call that advice, but just what do you see going into the next really?
Yeah, no, I don't want to give advice, but I'm expecting another big move this year. So I think it's going to stay quiet until it's not. It's going to be quiet for another week or two, or maybe another month or maybe two, probably at the most. But then we're going to have an announcement from Kazatomprom in late July, early August, that's going to forecast production for 2025. Not really sure what to expect there. I think the market is already pricing in flat-ish production estimations or maybe a slight rise. So I'm not necessarily saying that's going to be a huge catalyst for the sector. We'll have to see. But then we have the WNA conference in early September, and then we go into the fall, which is usually the big season for uranium. That's when a lot of utilities get new budgets. There's multiple conferences around nuclear, multiple fuel conferences that all happen September, October. And that usually leads in that it's what happened last year. I'm not saying rinse and repeat, but I am, you know, I'll go ahead and quote Treva Klingbeil from TradeTech. You know, she was asked, you know, we just saw this huge historic price move. The sector moving is moving sideways. What are you expecting now? And she said, repeat. And so it's going to stay quiet for a minute. Maybe we'll see the spot market chop around here in the low 80s for a little bit longer on negligible volume, whatever. As the equities sell off, I'm getting honestly pretty excited. I wasn't expecting this big of a pullback. So whenever this happens and the fundamentals in the background remain positive or increasingly positive, every single piece of the fuel cycle is moving up. Okay, we just saw conversion move up again last week. It's at all-time highs. EUP and enrichment are near all-time highs. The term market continues to stair-step higher. Spot market's going to do this over and over and over. So take advantage of that. If you're long this sector, if you're fundamentally bullish, take advantage of these flushes, because if you know the market is getting it wrong, then you can act on that. And that's what's really, really important. So it's going to be quiet for a little bit longer. I don't know how long, weeks, maybe a month, maybe a little bit longer than that. The equities are probably going to bottom during that period of time. And I'm personally going to be taking advantage of that. After that, I think anything is possible. And it really depends on the volumes and how crazy things get. So, but I think we're going to see another big move this year.
Excellent. Well, Dustin, I want to thank you so much for your time. I always really enjoy our talks and discussions, and love to have you on. And again, when I think things will really be moving by then.
It'd be my pleasure. Always good to talk to you.
Thanks, Justin.